From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, 16 states have joined together appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court to protect the religious freedoms of a Michigan funeral home. The case is about the Title VII civil rights law and the definition of sex. The Obama administration and some activist courts have treated sex, that is, male, female, that type of sex, they've treated it like silly putty, the term, making it mean almost anything. In just a moment, we'll talk with Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge, one of the states urging the Supreme Court to hear the case. And the president going after social media again for their bias. Honestly, it is so blatant, it's hard to ignore. Following the recent Jacksonville shooting, a Twitter user wished death on the children of syndicated talk show host Dana Loesch. Now, Twitter initially refused to act, saying it didn't violate their community standards. What? Challenging the logic of transgenderism in our elementary schools all the way to our military, that violates their standards, but the fact that someone wants to kill the children of a conservative does not. Dana joins me later in the show with the latest. Also, a new report out from the Centers for Disease Control. The U.S. has set a new record, but it's not a good one. Kathy Ruth, Senior Fellow and Director of Human Dignity at the Family Research Council, joins me with the details on that new report later in the program. We'll also be taking your phone calls on this Wednesday afternoon. Let me remind you, coming up September the 21st, 22nd, and wrapping up on the 23rd of September is the 13th Annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. Great lineup of speakers. You go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over last year, the president. You never know who's going to show up. We've got the Secretary of State's going to be there. We'll see the vice president. We've got a lineup of conservative leaders both in and out of government that will be there. This is a time for conservatives across the country to come together, hone their skills, focus upon what is important going into the fall's election, and you will be energized, encouraged, challenged, and you will go home ready to make a difference right where you live. There is still room. It's filling up very quickly. In fact, we are seeing the highest level of pre-registration ever in the 13 years that we've done the Values Voter Summit. So there's still room, but you need to hurry up. Go to TonyPerkins.com and register to be a part of this year's Values Voter Summit. Okay. Three governors and 13 Republican state attorneys general are appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court to protect the religious freedoms of a Christian-owned funeral home in Michigan. Now, a friend of the court brief was filed last week on behalf of the 16 states urging, I mean, it's pretty significant, 16 states coming together for this Christian-owned funeral home. Now, they're asking the Supreme Court to take up the case of R.G. and G.R. Harris Funeral Homes in Michigan. With us now is the Arkansas Attorney General, Leslie Rutledge, one of the states, one of the attorney generals that has signed on to this brief, asking the court to take the case. General Rutledge, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Glad to be on with you this afternoon.
Well, first, let me say congratulations on the recent birth of your daughter, Juliana, I understand July 27th, which makes you the first constitutional officer of Arkansas to give birth while holding office.
Well, that's right. I'm very, very excited. I am with her today, this afternoon. So if you hear some talking in the background, she may be weighing in on what mom's saying. So don't take offense.
As a father of five, don't worry. I've been there. I understand completely. I've done radio with kids running in the background, so I completely get it. So,
but we appreciate your well wishes, and you know, God is good. I tell you, He really is. And my husband, I feel so blessed. So thank you, Tony.
You should be. Children are a blessing from the Lord, and cherish each and every day. Let me ask you this question: just lay out for our listeners the facts in this case and why an Arkansas attorney general for the state of Arkansas is weighing in for a Michigan funeral home.
Essentially, what is happening in the Harris funeral home case versus the EEOC, the Sixth Circuit determined that the federal government should be allowed to compel a funeral home to allow a male employee to dress as a woman despite this funeral home's clear sex-specific dress code. And what we're arguing in this 16-state brief to the U.S. Supreme Court is essentially that we're explaining that sex under the plain, unambiguous meaning of Title VII means biological sex. Title VII, I'm referring to the 1964 Act by Congress prohibiting discrimination only on the basis of sex. Now, however, as you recall, and many of us do, this the water got a little muddy during President Obama's administration where we brought in gender identity and transgender status at the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And so what we're essentially saying is that sex and the plain, unambiguous meaning under Title VII means biological sex.
And that's what Congress passed in 1964. That's what Congress passed when the meaning was sex, male and female. The Obama administration, as I said earlier, treated that like silly putty and has stretched that to mean things that it was never intended to mean. And you're appealing to the court, said if this is going to be changed, it needs to be changed by the Congress, not by arbitrarily by appointed people on a commission.
Exactly. And not arbitrarily by the judges of the Sixth Circuit, that the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, is very clear putting the legislative powers with Congress. And that's, you know, it is the judiciary's role to interpret the law and not to make new laws. And what, you know, we're stating essentially is that the Sixth Circuit, the judges, are wrong in their reading, that they're wanting to create a new law or new definition under Title VII, that, quite frankly, that should be the decision of Congress and not the judges.
And that's, by the way, Attorney General, that's what we would say is an example of judicial activism, going beyond what the clear written law is.
That's right, and that's, you know, why so many of us have, you know, we must get away from judicial activism and looking at some of the appointees of this president that President Trump has put on the bench, and certainly the importance of having Supreme Court justices when there's openings, as there is now, but Justice Neil Gorsuch, a phenomenal selection by this president, to get away from judicial activism, to get back to originalism and textualism when deciding these cases and interpreting laws as they up against the Constitution, essentially.
Right.
That's why many of us are, I know I'm not here to talk about the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh, but that we're hoping that the Senate will take up those hearings, start those, and to confirm his nomination soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the backdrop to a lot of these things. That's why we're having a lot of these issues, is because we had courts that were activists, or judges that were activists, that were taking these meanings beyond what they were intended to be. Attorney General, there's also another issue here from the Sixth Circuit, in that they refused to allow the funeral home owners who are Christian, and I mean, it's a ministry. Many people see their work as ministry, and I certainly think that this is a prime example of that. When people are in crisis, they've lost loved ones, they want to minister to them, and so their Christian faith is front and center in what they do. They were told by the Sixth Circuit that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which provides protections, does not apply to them.
And, you know, that is, you know, something the RFRA came up many times, and that's something that as Christians, and that we must protect our religious liberties and in the courts, and particularly against activist courts such as this who are threatening those religious liberties.
Well, I'm grateful to see Arkansas, along with 15 other states, Nebraska kind of taking the lead on this to step in and defend religious freedom, because this ultimately, this definition of Title VII will not be limited to just this one funeral home. I mean, this is an issue that is going to affect people all across the country, and I'm hopeful, as I'm sure you are, that the Supreme Court will take this up and decide it rightly.
Well, certainly, Tony, and, you know, we've got a number of cases that involving religious freedom and our religious liberties that Arkansas has been a part of, and with other states. Last term, we saw last term in the Supreme Court, rather, we had the case, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates out mm-hmm. of California. That was the California case. You may right. or may not recall it, where essentially the court had to strike down a law that required pregnancy crisis centers or crisis pregnancy centers to provide information on abortions in total opposition to the religious beliefs of the crisis pregnancy centers. And that's a religious liberty case. Certainly we look at the cake shop, Mashpee's cake shop case that the Supreme Court decided at the end of its term this year with Jack Phillips out of Colorado. And now Jack is being attacked again from individuals there in Colorado on a transgender issue in terms of whether or not he would, you know, make a cake for someone to celebrate someone having a transgender operation to make that transition. And he has refused, but it's, you know, we must protect our religious liberties. We must protect these deeply held beliefs. And it's not, you know, we have to have a balance in our society that
right.
this is and that's something that even Justice Kennedy, I believe, noted in one of his opinions, talking about
yes.
the balance that is important. And so this is not a liberal or conservative matter. This is an American matter that we have to be able to live harmoniously in balance and tolerance is a two-way street.
And religious freedom is our first freedom for a reason, because everything else hinges on it, and we have to aggressively protect that freedom. And accommodations can be made at the same time. In all of these cases, accommodations can be made. The issue is there's an effort to use the government to force people to accept these wild ideas of gender and transgenderism and the redefinition of marriage. And so the whole idea of live and let live got lost, I think, after the court redefined marriage, which is what we were told this was all about. Attorney General, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. And again, thank you for weighing in on this important case, which I hope the Supreme Court takes up.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate it. Please let me know if we can do anything. God bless you. You have a great day.
Thank you so much. The Arkansas Attorney General, Leslie Rutledge. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And just to underscore the importance of these cases, she made reference to the NIFLA case that was the crisis pregnancy centers in California. That was decided, we've talked about this before, but just to remind you, that was decided 5-4. And that was a major free speech case, as well as religious freedom, First Amendment. One vote. That's how tenuous our first freedom is. It hangs in the balance. This midterm election is going to be extremely, extremely important, as is every election, increasingly. Okay, when we come back, Twitter, is there a double standard? The president's going after social media again, and I have to tell you, the double standard is so blatant. We're going to talk with Dana Loesch. Twitter initially refusing to address an issue where a man said her children should be murdered, saying it didn't violate their standards. Dana's here when we come back from the break. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, recently, Dana Loesch, conservative radio talk show host, spokesman for the National Rifle Association, and, by the way, someone who is a frequent attendee at the Values Voter Summit, she'll be there this year, she received death threats against her children on Twitter. But the tech giant initially said the threatening tweets did not violate its policies. Of course, after receiving major backlash, Twitter has since changed its decision and locked the offender's account. Is there a double standard for conservatives in how they are treated in the social media world? Here to answer that question is Dana herself. Dana, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony. Good to be with you.
Hey, I look forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit here in a few weeks. You're always great, and so looking forward to that. But let me just say this. I mean, as a parent of five children, and I know your husband, and I know you guys, you're just a great family. When people start talking about your children, I mean, that takes it to a whole new level. I mean, this is pretty outrageous. Did Twitter respond in the appropriate way?
I don't think that they responded in a way that was consistent with their terms of service, nor do I think it's consistent with what Jack Dorsey has said previously when he's discussed the issue of consistent application of terms of service on Twitter. It's sad that it even has to get this far. It's sad that it happened in the first place.
Right.
The idea that that anybody has to pay this kind of price or have this kind of discussion just because they're advocating for a particular issue or sharing a political thought is insane. They initially, it's crazy because when you compare what they did initially to this individual, and how they've treated other conservatives in the past and how they've, for instance, Kathleen McKinley, who had her account temporarily suspended simply because she did nothing more than share a very well-written, very rational and thought-out, really thoughtful column as to her view on transgenderism, et cetera. And apparently that triggered some individuals, and she had her account temporarily suspended.
There was Candace no attack. Owens. By the way, I read her post. There was no attack whatsoever. It was just saying that transgenderism in the military, in particular, she was focused on, makes no sense, and the cost associated with it, and her account was locked for violating standards. But threatening to kill or saying that someone's children should be killed, that doesn't violate their policy?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently that didn't violate their terms of service. And so many people reported this particular account, and Twitter apparently ignored it when we reported it. They finally responded and said that it didn't violate anything. Then, of course, there was public pressure, which began, which it shouldn't take public pressure.
Right.
The only reason there was public pressure is, because I have a platform, I'm on radio, I do television commentary, and other people noticed it, and it went from there. If I was just some regular, average, everyday mom, which I still am, but if I didn't do radio and I didn't do television, I doubt that there would have been any kind of public pressure at all, which is a real shame that you have to have. You have to be on air nationally. Now, here's the thing that I wanted to point out that people don't know about this yet. It will be coming out in the Daily Caller. Previously, Jack Dorsey has always talked about Twitter algorithms, and he has said that it is, it's about activity, and it's not real people back in the offices of Twitter that are pressing buttons. Which apparently someone had to do that because Twitter then announced that they have re-reviewed when they sent that email to us. They had re-reviewed this account back in 2016, because this isn't the first time that I've dealt with this, and I don't even share the most serious ones online. Back in 2016, someone put my phone number and home address and photos of my house on all over Twitter. And this individual called my private number one evening around 11 o'clock at night and was so threatening both on Twitter and on the phone that we had to have the police come out to the house immediately. And we were working with law enforcement on this issue. And I haven't spoken about it publicly, yet until now, but they began an investigation, and they submitted grand jury subpoenas to Twitter, but Twitter refused to acknowledge the subpoena, and they wouldn't release any information despite the grand jury issuing the order. Now, at this exact same time, someone on the very far left, a gentleman named Kurt Eichenwald, who lives in the same Dallas area that I do, had received a threat on Twitter, and Twitter immediately cooperated with him and law enforcement and released all records of the offending account. This goes way beyond algorithm. This is about active bias, and I've been consistent in that. I've never called for the government to regulate any of these platforms. They are begging for that to happen themselves because they are not, which all I've ever asked for and others, they are not actively and consistently enforcing their terms of service for all users.
Yeah, I mean, I am against anyone advocating for violence, right or left. I mean, that has no place in a republic. You cannot maintain civil society if you're threatening violence because you disagree with people. So that should be the line, but that's not the line. It's an ideological line that is very subjective, and we see it time and time again, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Google. And I think the president is absolutely right. When the president says there is bias, there is bias, and I think your case is a prime example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Bias, and it comes down to the question of who actually owns the digital public square, and it's about corporate censorship. It's suppression of speech simply based on ideology, and to allow to sanction this stuff by silence. And I think that that's what it is when you allow this behavior to occur, and when it's not treated equally, in many ways, I personally feel that it encourages that behavior because these individuals don't feel that there's any deterrent. Anonymity has given great courage to individuals who have more zeal than knowledge and more zeal than compassion. And this is a result.
And in many ways, Twitter and Facebook provide a shield of protection for the left who are advocating violence against conservatives.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Dana, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to seeing you at the Values Voter Summit coming up.
Looking forward to it, Tony. Thank you.
All right. Keep up the great work. Dana Lash. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. The left increasingly are violent. And if you look at compare left to right, there's really no comparison. I'll talk more about that because I actually had almost identical experience that Dana talked about that I've never talked about on radio as well. Threats, death threats from the left that actually involved, we had to get law enforcement involved. All right, when we come back, a new report from the CDC. Not a good one. We talk about it next. Don't go away.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. Okay, the Center for Disease Control said the United States set a new record. It's not a good one. It is a record of sexually transmitted diseases. It hit an all-time high with nearly 2.3 million cases reported last year, eclipsing the record set in 2016 by more than 200,000 cases. Joining us now is Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow and Director of Human Dignity at the Family Research Council. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Kathy, you have a column out on this report, correct?
I do. It's so shocking. It just broke my heart when I read this, especially, and we'll probably get into this, the age group we're talking about that is most affected by these increases.
I mean, these are young people.
These are young people. 15 to 24 years old is the demographic that is suffering from these huge increases in sexually transmitted diseases. And as I wrote in my column, these are our children. Our children are who should be, enjoying health, vitality, healthy bodies, right? These are children.
Right.
They are suffering from these diseases in disproportionately high numbers, and it's just an absolute tragedy.
Well, and Kathy, I want to make very clear for our listeners and some people who, aren't really plugged into this, you don't just take a pill and get over this or get a shot. I mean, some of these could lead to very serious, life-threatening complications later in life.
They can. What the data show is there are 500,000 new cases of gonorrhea, and gonorrhea is strikes silently. People may not know they have it, and they can spread it around. Syphilis, 30,000 new cases of syphilis, and 1.7 million new cases, 1.7 million new cases of chlamydia. And half of those new cases are in young women, really young women, 15 to 24. And chlamydia can cause infertility. It can cause pelvic inflammatory disease, stillbirth, even death from infection. It's extremely serious what we're talking about. And in the case of gonorrhea is maybe soon categorized as a sex a superbug that is resistant to all antibiotics. Gonorrhea has resisted every type of antibiotic that was used to treat it except one. There's one remaining antibiotic. And the CDC doctors are predicting that gonorrhea will withstand that antibiotic, and then it will become untreatable. So it is a crisis. Looking at the press release, and I also looked at the transcripts of the conference, the word is this: that we in the United States are in an absolute STD public health crisis, and the U.S. has the highest STD rates in all of the industrialized world. So it's an absolute crisis.
Well, Kathy, we're not hearing much about it. I mean, you know, we talk about it here occasionally as a new report comes out, but that's not going to make headlines in the papers. It's going to be back pages. Nobody's going to talk about it. What is contributing to this? I mean, I have my ideas when you look at the curriculum of the sex ed that we're seeing in the schools that I would say is nothing short of promoting sexual behavior. What's leading to the rise in these sexually transmitted diseases?
Well, it depends on who you ask, really, is the short answer. When you look at the CDC's press release, says it's lack of awareness, lack of education, doctors aren't screening or testing, and they also blame a cutback in federal funding. Interestingly, they also cite refer to prior studies that suggests that poverty, stigma, and discrimination are responsible for the rise in these rates. Now, I would tend to agree with you. Sex education, comprehensive sex education, now we're looking at the last 4 years of the Obama administration are the years that were measured here, 2013 to 2017. A decade ago, we were seeing a reduction in STDs. So the officials from CDC are saying we're backsliding big time and breaking new records, looking from 2013 to 2017. When you look beyond the CDC and look around and do a little research, what is causing these increases, you see some other indications, like riskier behavior among men who have sex with men. Some people point fingers to PrEP, which is a drug that many say promotes riskier behavior in that community. Also, you see many references to these so-called dating apps like Tinder or Grindr, which are used for hookups and anonymous sex. One report, Tony, that I read said the impact of these sites is so profound that they're transforming the way health officials track outbreaks. And then you look at sex education in schools. It is a green light. It started green light for sex for kids, and it's given at younger and younger and younger ages, and we can't ignore the impact of that.
All right, Kathy, we're up against a break. Can you stick around, because I got a couple more questions for you that I'd like
sure.
to ask, because I think people need to realize that this is a pandemic. I mean, this is spreading across the nation, and there's a cost associated with it. It can't be cured, like I said, with a pill or a shot in many cases. And there are cumulative costs that all of us pay, not only individually, but collectively. We're going to talk about that with Kathy Roos, senior fellow here at the Family Research Council, when we return. And we're also going to be going to the phone lines here on Washington Watch on this Wednesday afternoon. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. All right, we're going to be taking your phone calls here in a little bit. I'm going to get your thoughts on this. I'm talking with Kathy Roos. I'm going to bring her back here in just a moment. Senior Fellow and Director of Human Dignity at the Family Research Council. Talk about a new report that was just released by the Centers for Disease Control that the United States has set a new record. It's not a good one like we saw yesterday with the stock market. This is a record with the highest number of sexually transmitted diseases ever. And we had set a previous record. This is from 2017 data, the data from 2017. 2016 set a record. What do you think is contributing to this? Let me know. We'll talk about it. 866-372-7234. Kathy, thanks for sticking around. Let's talk a little bit about the cost associated with this. I mean, this is not, I just think people just think, like, again, you get a shot, take a pill, you fix it, no complications. There are some serious costs collectively that we pay, not to mention the individual costs associated with some of these STDs.
Well, you're absolutely right. If you just looking at numbers, this conference hosted by the CDC, at the conference, it was reported that this crisis costs the United States more than $16 billion in preventable health care costs a year.
Wait a minute, that's with a B, right?
That's with a B, and that's a collective cost for sure, because we're all paying for this. In a sense, the sexual revolutionaries are piling up these costs, and all the rest of us. But there's also a collective cost, of course, in broken marriages, broken homes, fatherless children, an epidemic of loneliness we keep seeing come up over and over again, and a generation of children who have not been able to witness God's design for marriage, because of the fallout of all of this. Individually, looking at the diseases themselves, you see things like infertility is a very serious health outcome of untreated gonorrhea and chlamydia. With syphilis, we used to have syphilis taken care of after penicillin, you know, 60 years ago. But syphilis is on the rise. And so you're seeing last year it was reported that 1,000 babies were born with congenital syphilis, and 40% of those were stillborn. So these are devastating health impacts from this kind of epidemic rise in sexually transmitted diseases. Again, felt most acutely by very, very young people and even teenagers.
And it doesn't have to happen. This is not one of those things that, you know, you have it by chance. You might get it if you don't engage in sexual activity before marriage, if you're not sexually active, promiscuously, the chances of getting this are almost zero.
Well, right. Saving sex for marriage and then being faithful to your spouse is a very simple proposition, but it is one that has been rejected as offensive, and it doesn't fit with the sexual revolution. The sexual revolution demands value-free sex education, value-neutral. There is no right or wrong. We cannot encourage young people to aspire to any sort of ideal that will bring them health and happiness. So
That's what's crazy about this is that we know what is best for children, and this is not based upon something we read somewhere or some kind of, even though there clearly is a morality here. Apart from all that, the social science, the actual science, and I say social science because there's emotional aspects we haven't even gotten into on this.
Right.
The physical effects of this. I mean, you would think that as a society, we would want to direct our young people to that which will make them healthy, happy, and prosperous citizens.
Right. But ideology trumps that, Tony. I mean, we see an epidemic. Well, I don't know if I can officially call it an epidemic, but everyone's talking about anxiety and depression in public schools now on the part of children. Well, why do you think that, what could that possibly be related to? Why don't we connect some of these dots? Emotionally, this is pushing kids down a perilous path, physically, spiritually. We allow this experiment. We don't. I mean, you and I fight it, Family Research Council, and then there's great organizations out there, and I think this administration is doing the right thing in its health and human services in the way it's going to be allocating our tax dollars in terms of programs and so forth. So there is some progress being made, but here's the thing. A decade ago, everything was dropping. All of these rates were going down. They were going in the right direction. And then from 2013 to 2017, it went in the wrong direction radically, and now we're breaking all records. So what happened in those years? I mean, that's what people, no one at this conference mentions, what changed in 2013? What kind of policies, what did we start doing in 2013 that started causing everything to go wrong? That should be looked at.
Well, we saw the policies of the Obama administration, which went the opposite direction of the Bush administration, which emphasized sexual risk avoidance and abstinence. Kathy, before I let you go, let's bring this down to a very practical level. You're a mother. You have young children. I'm a father. We've got five kids. And it ultimately, the first line of defense for children in this area are the parents. And the parents need to have these conversations with the kids. Number one, challenging them. If the society won't do it, parents need to do it to challenge their children to follow God's plan for their life, and that is to be abstinent until marriage, and then monogamous in that relationship once married, but also discuss the complications and the consequences of violating that, and this is a prime example of it.
One thing that helps our message to our children as moms and dads, unfortunately, is the wreckage we see all around us. I mean, that's a very visible evidence that we can point out to our kids lovingly and say, look, everybody wants to be happy, and there's a path to happiness that we believe in as your mom and dad, and we're going to teach you what that path is. And then kind of, it's almost like equipping your kids to go into battle. I mean, it's really a battle now in our culture. But you can look at, you can see the visible signs of tragedy and sadness all around us. And sometimes you can't draw a straight line, but the path of safety and security, the surest path for your children, we have to just continue to gently, lovingly try to direct them to that path. But it's an effort. It's an exhausting effort. You can't stop. It's just a constant thing. Parents have to be vigilant every second with their kids.
You are absolutely correct. Kathy Ruth, thank you so much for joining us today. Great piece. I'm going to encourage people to read it. Then go to TonyPerkins.com and see it. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Tony. I was so happy to be with you.
All right. Kathy Ruth, senior fellow here at the Family Research Council and the director of the Human Dignity at the Family Research Council. Great piece. And it is. These are kind of things, I know people don't like to talk about it. I know, and, you know, I'd rather not talk about these kind of things on radio, but somebody needs to talk about it because your kids are hearing about it. They're seeing it on TV. They're experiencing it at school. Trust me, if you're not having conversations with your kids, you ought to. And you will find out what they're hearing, what they're seeing. And this is a really a good conversation piece to talk about the consequences of our choices. And talk about how what God lays out for us, as, and this applies to adults, by the way, it's not just to kids, but the parameters that God puts in place for us in our relationships, we've been taught or conditioned by the culture to see those as negative, like somehow we're hemmed in, we're behind this big fence and we can't get to the other side where the grass is green. Now, actually, on the other side of the fence, the grass is poisoned. God puts these parameters there for our happiness and for our health. And so it's not to actually prevent us from having anything that, something nice or something enjoyable. Rather, it's to direct us to a path of fulfillment. And we need to be challenging our young people to do what is not, not act upon every emotion when you have it. But the whole idea of delayed gratification, of following God's best plan for your life. And if parents aren't willing to do that, I'm going to tell you right now, they're not going to get it in school unless by some chance they happen to have a teacher who is willing to speak truth in the midst of a very, just a perverse culture. You know, we've talked about the sex ed curriculum that is, pornographic, no way I can describe it, which is enticing, I think, kids to experiment, to explore. It normalizes this behavior. And we see the same thing with the transgenderism and the same-sex relationships. Look, this is all, it's all to steer children, or the effect is, it steers children away from God's design and what is best for them. And parents, you need to be engaged in this. You need to be talking to your children, shepherding them, protecting them, and leading them to what is best for them. All right, I want to take on another topic here. Some of you will be glad I am, but I want to take on another topic. I was on CNN this morning, and there was apparently an audio taken of the dinner we had the other night. I talked about it yesterday briefly. The dinner we had at the White House, the president and evangelicals. And, the president went through the litany of accomplishments of this administration, which, as I sat there, I was quite frankly beyond encouraged. Because I remember back in some of you might recall this, that have been around a while with us, in 2014, the Values Voters Summit, 4 years ago, we recognized a Sudanese Christian mother who had been imprisoned in Sudan for her faith, for being a Christian. She was sentenced to die. And in large part because of many of our listeners and At the time, Megyn Kelly was on Fox, and she had me on many times talking about it as we were advocating for her. And we were able to get her released. We met with the Sudanese officials. We had hearings. We were able to get her out. So anyway, we recognized her with the Cost of Discipleship Award. And I remember in the green room, Frank Wolf was talking to me, former congressman from Virginia, who was actually the author of the International Religious Freedom Act back 20 years ago. He said, Tony, we need to make religious freedom. You need to make religious freedom the central issue in the next presidential election. And as I sat in the White House, I actually thought about that because the president was discussing religious freedom and what his administration has done, is doing, and plans to continue to do for religious freedom. And then he went on, and of course he talked about the sanctity of human life and what they've done for life, and Mexico City policy, more robust than even Ronald Reagan did in terms of restricting federal dollars to support abortion, your tax dollars. Talked about the HHS mandate, which forced nuns to fund contraceptives and abortifacients in their health care plans. The military, where it became illegal to pray and talk about God in some cases, people being punished. And he said, all of that will be gone. It'll be turned over quickly if the elections are lost. And he said, we see the violence on the left. We see Antifa and what they're doing. Don't think that this stuff will last forever. And his point was, for me, was well taken on me, that there is intensity on the left. And to think that what we've accomplished, he talked about the Johnson Amendment, that's going to be there. He said, don't fool yourselves. You cannot be complacent in this election. Well, the media and others have taken that snippet and said the president said if we lose the election, there's going to be violence in the streets. That's not what he was advocating. He was saying there is intensity on the other side. And these policies that have tried to right the wrongs of the Obama administration will be gone. And for that reason, Christians need to be engaged and involved in this election. And to that, I say a hearty amen. Folks, the changes we've seen, and there are many more to go, I would never say mission accomplished at this point. But I would say we're making tremendous progress, more than I ever envisioned, restoring religious freedom in this country. The sanctity of human life. But it could all be gone. Now, our hope is not in government. But we certainly don't want to have to work against government or having government work against us or punish us for wanting to live out our faith in a way that honors our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So, folks, our republic, the future of it, depends on you being involved in it. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.